It's a Q&A day. You guys set the agenda. Esther and I are just here primarily for the fun. So if anything meaningful happens, it's going to be up to you. So let's go for it. Esther, would you bring your friends up and join us? Say good morning to Esther, would you please?
Thank you very much. Hello. Bye. Good morning. We are extremely pleased that you are here. It is good to come together for the purpose of co-creating. Do you agree?
Yes.
You are knowing what you are wanting? An evolving thing? An expanding thing? You like the evolution of your desire? The answer is yes, yes. We made you say it, and you don't really mean it yet. Well, the question that we really like to ask is, you are among the rare humans who are really enjoying the contrast of your time and place. And almost no one says wholeheartedly yes until they remember that the contrast of your environment is what inspires your new desires. And the new desire is the summoning of all things. In other words, when you ask, it is given. So when contrast gives birth to a desire, that desire has summoning power. And that summoning power is life force. You know how that works, don't you? The variety of your life literally causes you to give birth to new preferences. And when you do, energy, source energy, flows from source through you to your new idea. And that source energy part of you then calls you toward it. The call of source is all about that. In other words, talk about a current, talk about an energy stream, talk about inspiration, talk about an impulse, talk about a stream that is flowing so magnificently that it takes quite a bit of effort to not go in the direction of it. It's a powerful stream. So when you go with the flow of that stream, we call that allowing. Allowing yourself to stay up to speed with what life has caused all of you to become. And when you don't go with the flow of that stream, we call that resistance. And that resistance is something that you learn along your physical trail. It's hard work to be in that state of resistance. And we say, why not turn your boat in the direction of the current and just go with the flow? And our human friends say, well, that just seems lazy. And if we press them, they'll get even more defensive about it. They'll say, not only that, but anyone who's worth anything is paddling upstream. It's just what we do. Because all of the trophies and all of the monuments are given to those who work very hard as they paddle against the current, because anyone can just let go and go with the flow. Where's the virtue in that? Where's the accomplishment in that? Why would you get a reward for doing something that is so easy, something that anybody could do? And we say, because nothing that you want is upstream. And you know how we know that to be? Because we are the source energy that you are before you were born, and we know the direction of that stream. We are that non-physical essence that becomes one with the preferences that you give birth to. In other words, we are there calling you downstream. And you know where we are? We're where everything you've been asking for is. We're where your future is. We're where your alignment is. We're where your clarity is. We're where your health is. We're where your abundance is. We are where everything that you want is. And we are calling you this way. And anytime you are pointed in opposition, that's what negative emotion is. In the moment that you let go of the defensive or justifying or rationalizing thought, in the moment that you release it, you stop paddling upstream. And do you know what happens when you stop paddling upstream? Your boat turns and starts going downstream. You don't have to paddle downstream. You don't even have to paddle your turn. Just stop paddling upstream. Let go of the oars. Let go of your determined justification or defensiveness or rationalization or beating the drum of what's wrong or explaining how you got there or explaining how long you've been there or explaining that it's not fair that you are there or complaining about being there. In the moment that you stop doing that, the river will turn you. And do you know, in the moment that you stop doing that and the turn takes place, you feel relief. And it's the relief factor that we want you to begin focusing upon, because if through the day, no matter where you are in the stream, you are relaxing with the intention of giving yourself relief, what's happening is you are bit by bit, day by day, releasing more and more and more layers of resistance, and you are allowing the stream to carry you more in the direction of what you are wanting. You see, the stream is already flowing. Sometimes people say, well, I need to do more goal setting, and I need to say more affirmations. I need to make more things happen. I need to get control of my life, and I need to make more things happen. I need to be more disciplined, and I need to do more of the things that will make things happen. And we say, we want you to understand that your life experience itself has been all that has been necessary for you to establish your future experience. Every time someone's rude to you, you want people to be nicer. When you're rude, you want to be nicer. When you're confused, you want more clarity. When you don't have enough of something you want more of it. In other words, you're constantly adding to this vibrational escrow. And it is so well tended to by the source energy that is you, by the source energy that has become the vibrational equivalent of everything that you have been asking for. You could not even, if you had all day long, all week long, all year long, you could not sit and write an accurate description of what your life has caused you to become. But the source energy part of you knows it so clearly and is calling you so constantly toward it that if you will just listen for the way you feel and make it your dominant intention to reach for the best feeling thought you can find from wherever you are, you will find relief, 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 relief. And as you do, the stream will carry you closer and closer and closer to the fulfillment of the things that you want. And you will get the fulfillment of all of those things that you want. We promise you every one of them will manifest. But in the meantime, you'll be having a joyful ride. So you're getting the sense of this. It is natural for you to expand. It is natural for you to excel. It is natural for you to succeed in all things that are important to you. That is natural. And anything else is not natural. It is natural for you to feel good. It is not natural for you to feel bad. So when we talk about this emotional guidance scale, we're on the really good feeling end of it, where love and appreciation and joy and passion and all of that wonderful good feeling stuff is. That's where you perceive yourself as free and empowered. And on the end of the emotional scale that feels like fear or feels like depression, there is the perception on your part of bondage or lack of empowerment or lack of freedom. And what we're wanting you to realize is that it is all perceptual. In other words, we know that you look at things and you say, oh, I'm looking at this, and this thing that I'm looking at is making me feel the way that it is. And we acknowledge that when you look at good feeling things that you feel better, and when you look at bad feeling things that you feel worse. But we want you to understand that in everything that you look at, you have this relief factor. You have this potential of making it worse or making it better. You have the potential of looking at it and softening it in a way that makes you feel better, or looking at it in a way that makes you feel worse. And if you will make a decision today that you're going to be a wouldn't it be nice if-er instead of a oh isn't it an awful-er, in other words, if you will make a decision that you're going to do more looking for what feels better, just lean toward the positive instead of grasping for the negative, if you will stop beating the drum of what's wrong and attempt to beat the drum more of what's right, you're going to turn in that stream more and more and more. And that thrills us just to think about it, because we've seen your vibrational escrow. We know what you have put there. We have seen the power of your stream, and we know the potential of your joy. And we want very much for you to relax and begin to go with the flow of the natural resources that Source is providing. Good. Where do you want to begin? Some things. Good. Start right there. Stand if you think it's you. Yes.
Hello. I want to talk about passion, how to attain it and sustain it. I live an absolutely dream life right now in just every way. And I get to do something that I'm passionate about. I get to do it every day, and it's just wonderful. But sometimes I don't have as much energy as I'd like. I would like to be able to go from dawn to dusk and just full bore.
Well, the most important thing that we want to give you is don't be so concerned at closing the gap as you are concerned at just pointing yourself in the right direction and making your way there. In other words, it's a little bit like Jerry and Esther being in Phoenix and looking forward to being in San Diego and wanting to be in San Diego, but having the 400-mile journey if being there is what matters to them. And so in the analogy that we are comparing here, San Diego is the passion that you're wanting to achieve, and you might be on your way to it. And we want you to relax and be satisfied that you're moving in the direction of it. Contrast causes you to launch a desire. And the more attention you give to that desire, the more energy it accumulates. So when you focus upon something and you don't contradict it with doubtful thoughts, that desire begins to summon energy in a very powerful way. So the specific answer to your question, how do I achieve and sustain passion, is focus upon what you want and never focus in contradiction to what you want, and you would maintain eternally that passionate perspective. Passion is the symptom of fast-moving, non-resisted energy.
Okay, I've got another question, may I? On the total other end of the scale, there's grief. And I can't imagine not feeling grief if somebody that I love dies. And yet, you seem to be saying, just get over it. And is there a sort of an appropriate amount of grief? Is there, I mean, it seems to me it's got to be natural. I mean, if my dog died, I would just be floored.
And the perfect amount of grief is none. But you see,
how do you do that?
I mean,
because your relationship has changed. You have your beloved dog there, and then he's not there, and the relationship is different.
We know that there are things that are going to happen that are going to make you feel that way. But do you know what the emotion, the visceral feeling, that feeling in your body of grief or fear or despair, they are, no matter what word you assign to it, in every single case, it is because of your perception that something bad has happened to which you are having this awful emotional response and over which you have no control. And we're just wanting to point out to you that while it is absolutely normal to have knee-jerk responses to those things that are happening, because of course you want that person to be in your experience longer or that animal to be in your experience longer, it is the conscious awareness that you do have the ability to focus your way out of that grief. That's the thing that we want to leave. We would not want to say to anyone, you should not be sad when your mother dies or when your father dies. But we do want to say, the reason that you are sad is because you've focused yourself in a way that is causing that sadness. And you could just as easily focus yourself in a way that isn't so sad. And it is that awareness that you can focus yourself, because you see, the fear itself or the negative emotion itself, the reason it feels so awful is without exception because of your perception of loss of control. Think about that. On one end of the emotional scale is passion and love and appreciation. And as you move down the emotional scale, and we mean more resistance, less allowing, into from optimism into pessimism, into frustration and overwhelmment, into those vibrations that are even denser of anger and rage and revenge and fear and despair or grief. As you move down or up this emotional scale, the thing that we want you to realize is the better it feels, the more your perception of freedom, the more your perception of being able to feel the way you want to feel. And the worse it feels, it's your perception of something happening out of your control where you are forced to face it and forced to feel it and unable to do anything about it. That is what the emotional scale is all about. And so when we say the appropriate amount of grief is none, what we are really meaning is we want you to know unequivocally, undeniably, in every instance of your life, that you have the wherewithal to focus in a way that allows the energy, that passionate energy that you're talking about, to flow.
Okay, so in the middle of the scale, we've gone from one end to the other. In the middle is contentment. I mean, if you're always content and everything is all is well, and you know, why would you ever move from there? I mean, why would you ever do anything? You can just be content.
We're glad that you bring this up, because let's talk about contentment in its fullest definition. So we would define contentment as the perfect balance in this moment between my focused desire and my expectation. In other words, I want it and I'm expecting it. Now, come with us with the vision of being in an airplane at 50,000 feet, going 700 miles across the sky, and looking out the window, and everything's going by just fine. We'd call that contentment. Now put that same aircraft on the ground. Not so comfortable. The resistance of the ground makes that 700 miles an hour make you want a long, long runway. So we're going to take you to a new place, or you're taking us to a new place here. So you've been hearing us say that as you reach for the best feeling thought you can find, and you manage to move yourself up this emotional scale, we have noticed that there is no ending to the relief that you're capable of finding, which means that feeling of contentment that you're right, we put smack dab in the middle of that scale, that feeling of contentment can move as your desires and expectations change. And so things that would have just knocked you over, that you would have said, I'm passionate about at one time, now you feel rather content about them because you have vibrationally prepared yourself for the achieving of that, you see. So we would like to redefine that contentment just a little bit by saying that what you're always reaching for, what the emotional guidance system is about, and now as we're saying it in these new words, these vibrational points of relativity, what your work is always the same. It is to bring yourself into alignment.
Well, it almost sounds like contentment should be on the high end of the scale then, because if that's the perfect balance, I mean, why is passion better, or isn't it?
It's an individual thing. In other words, this rudimentary scale that we've defined there is to try to help people become aware, first of all, that they have emotions and that the emotions that they have are indications of their vibrational relativity. In other words, most people are not managing their energy at all. They would rather take action and try to make the action fix things rather than getting to the heart of the vibration, which then makes everything come easily for you. As you're reaching for that passion and finding vibrational alignment with it and maintaining it, and then life begins to fill in around it, pretty soon that becomes your central place. In other words, you just keep reaching. So for now you say passion would feel better, and we say when you get to the place where passion is your norm, you'll call it contentment. And then you'll be reaching for further passionate things. In other words, your question has given us the best way of explaining this ever-evolving capacity to desire, and what we notice is that the better it gets, the better it gets, the better it gets, the better it gets.
Thanks.
Yes, indeed.
That's great.
Yes, indeed.
Thank you, Abraham. I've been dealing with a lot of loss lately in my life over the past couple of years. I'm 48 years old, and I feel like all my dreams that I've dreamt are suddenly disappearing, and other dreams are looming on the horizon.
Looming?
Blooming.
Better.
I'm wondering how to deal with the loss, and also how to jumpstart my passion for what's blooming on the horizon when I'm still dealing with all this loss.
Makes sense? Want to talk more specifically?
Sure. There's a specific sacred site that's been in my family since 1932, and a corporate business merging happened, and everyone sold out instead of me, and I was the last holdout, and then I was forced to sell. And I feel a great loss about this place.
So tell us about this sacred place. What's so good about it?
Well, it's a hot springs in New Mexico. It's been there for thousands of years. 5 different mineral waters. It's been in my family since 1932.
Do they prohibit you from going there?
Well, sort of now. Yeah, it's a whole different company. It's a whole different family. And it used to be my home, and now I feel kicked out.
Well, maybe you are. In other words, maybe it's not a place that you feel welcome or are welcome, but it's a big planet. That didn't help, did it?
Sorry about the tears. I'm just...
Oh, that's all right. We really want you to hear this. And we talked about it in different ways already here today, that there is this common approach to life that says, under these conditions, I feel good. But under these conditions, I feel bad. But then you have to control conditions, which you can't do. So when your happiness depends upon controlling a condition that you can't control, then it seems you're almost destined to not feel good. And that just isn't the way that it is. You have the power to turn your thoughts. So you start out in this place of what would you say the emotion is that you feel about that? Betrayal? Despair? How strong is the emotion?
Very strong.
So almost anything's downstream from there, isn't it? So were you angry about it ever?
Very angry.
Did that feel better than the betrayal that you felt before?
Yes, however, it affects other people, my anger.
Well, we're not encouraging you to make a career out of it. We're just encouraging you to pass through it on your way to something that feels ever so much better. And the thing is, when you are depressed, when you feel forsaken, when you feel powerless, and you get mad, you at least can begin breathing again. And as you begin breathing again, then you can reach for something that feels less angry. So take us through that. What's the angry thoughts that you were thinking? Bring yourself back to that place.
Betrayal of my own family. My own family. My grandfather purchased this place in 1932, and it was supposed to be our heritage, our legacy for generations. And then the third generation sold out, and I was the last holdout. I refused to sell out, and I'm angry at my family.
All right, so now as you were telling us that story, part of it pointed downstream a bit as you got a little bit angry, but part of it pointed back upstream again as you talked about what it was supposed to be. So keep pointing downstream just a little bit. Talk to us about the injustice of it just a little bit more. You'll feel better. We know, it's odd. People say, well, I went to this enlightening, uplifting seminar and they coached me into revenge. And we say, we would never coach you toward revenge if you were frustrated. If you were in frustration, we would never coach you that way. That's upstream. But when you feel powerless, that anger does give you a... And here's another thing that's very important. When you deliberately choose a thought of anger because it feels better than the thought of powerlessness that you had, and you feel your anger and you recognize the relief that you feel in it, and you're doing it deliberately, now you're moving in the right direction. And so then you reach for something a little less angry. For example, if we were standing in your physical shoes, we would be appreciating the time there, but that's too big of a stretch for where you are. Or we would appreciate the financial benefit that came. Was there any to you?
Slight, very tiny. You know, there's nothing that can equal that place monetarily to me.
Well, we get that from you, but even that statement is still an upstream statement. In other words, what you are beating the drum of, and we certainly understand it, is you feel like if you just complain vehemently enough about this that something will shift for you, and yet you don't really believe that. Do you believe that if you talk long enough and hard enough about the injustice of this that somehow the whole thing will be reversed and you will be returned to that place?
If only I could afford a good lawyer, maybe.
Well, it's possible that you could get a good lawyer and that you could stir enough up that you could bring some different behavior about. But, you know, the reason that that place feels good to you is because it was a catalyst to your alignment. And don't take this the wrong way, and don't sue us either. Do whatever you want. But we think you're better off without that place because it's going to give you an opportunity to return to the way that you felt with that place without it. In other words, you can learn alignment because of this. When something really, really matters to you and you feel it as deeply as you're feeling it and you want to feel good, but you can't do anything about it under those conditions, and you make it an emotional journey rather than a lawsuit journey, you make it an emotional journey rather than an action journey, and you return yourself to the aligned being that you are. In fact, we will say to you, you can, if you will work with this a little bit, return to who you really are and be more substantially aligned to who you really are than you've ever been in all of your life experience. When you count on a circumstance or another person to be the catalyst for your alignment, you're not really free because you're dependent upon those other things. And until you discover that your happiness depends upon your alignment and everybody else's happiness depends upon their alignment, and you stop trying to control what the rest of them do, and you just stand where you are, put your boat in the water where you are, and where you've got your boat in the water right now is without that property. It just is. You need to make peace with it. This is where I'm putting my boat in the water, and I can complain, which is upstream, and deprive myself of all of the things that are in vibrational escrow, even the new wonderful things that have been put there since this conflict started. Or I can find a thought that feels a little better and begin to move toward it. It really is that. You only have those choices in any point in time. Your choice is not to feel horrible or to feel wonderful. You don't have those choices. The only choice you have in any moment in time, and all of your power is right here in this moment in time, you have the choice of flowing toward who you are or away from who you are. And your guidance tells you which you're doing. And when you consistently begin leaning in the direction of who you are, you get feeling better and 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 better. Until your alignment with Source is what matters most. And then when you achieve that, everything else comes into alignment. A woman said to us one day, Abraham, I don't think you care if my lover ever comes. I think you just want me to get so good at feeling good anyway that I don't even notice that he's not here. And we said, that's exactly right. Because when you get so good at feeling good that you don't notice that something's wrong, now everything that you want must come.
And just let everybody else figure it out on their own. Yeah.
You have no choice. You have no choice but to let them figure it out. Jerry and Esther get a box every weekend when they come to a new hotel. The office sends it. And Jerry cannot wait to dive into it and read the messages and emails and so on. And he pulled two out in a row. Two people had been to the same seminar, and one of them said, "I did not like my experience at all." And the other one said, "This was the best experience of my life." And Esther said, "I'm glad it's not our job to control their experiences." Good enough?
Good enough. Thank you.
Thank you. Abraham, I have a question, but I'd like to put it in context. I am struggling with, how do I know what I want to do?
You'll never know while you're struggling.
Okay.
Because in the struggle, you're upstream, and what you know is downstream.
Okay.
So the struggle itself keeps you from ever knowing.
Okay.
So start by telling a different story.
Okay. The context I'm around with this is a year and a half ago, my 34-year-old son was found dead in his home. And we do not know why, and we will probably not ever know why. The journey I've had this year and a half has taken me through incredible grief. And there is something about this that I feel like there's something I'm supposed to do with it. My feeling is our society does not really know how to deal with grief. I didn't know how to deal with grief. I've learned a lot about this and how to be with someone in grief, what I wanted in grief. And I just feel like there's something I'm supposed to do, and yet I don't know what to do with this. I don't know where to go with it.
From our point of view, grief, no matter what the cause, and there can be no more legitimate reason for grief than the one you've spoken here. But just the same, grief, no matter what the reason, is separation from knowing. So in grief, the dominant intent is to move away from the grief and back to the knowing. In other words, they are as close to opposite poles of anything. Knowing is alignment, grief is utter disempowerment. And the thing that makes it hard for physical friends is that they want to sort out all of the reasons for the grief and talk about them. And we only want to talk about grief alignment. And so most people, even though what they really want is for the grief to lift and to come back into alignment, most people want to sort out the details of it. It's pleasing to us to hear you say, "We don't know what happened and probably never will know, and we want you to not care about knowing, because you can't poke around in that without maintaining the grief, and the grief is not what you want. Closing the gap is what you want," you see. We talk a lot about this emotional scale and how from grief, the logical step is anger, and there is release of pain in the anger. But then the logical step from anger is not back to grief. The logical step from anger is less anger and less anger into frustration and eventually hoping, believing, and knowing. So when you say, "My struggle is that I want to know what I know and I want to know how to get to what I know," that what you're asking for, and your words could not have been better, you're wanting to help people understand alignment. When you decide that you want to feel good and you begin listening for the way you are feeling and choosing your thoughts based upon how the thought feels and showing yourself that you can return to the alignment that is natural to you, your grief will lift. And so here are a series of statements that we want to say. The grief that you feel is not about the death of your son. It's about the lack of alignment between you and you. Now, of course, that was the catalyst. And of course, if that hadn't happened, you would not be experiencing this grief. But we want to say, people say, I feel terrible because I miss this person who is no longer physically here with me. And we say, you don't miss the person who's no longer physically here with you. You miss the way you felt when that person was physically here with you. It's the alignment that is missing, not the person. Because the person is not missing. Death doesn't separate you from anyone. But vibration separates you from who you are, and when you're separated from who you are, you're now separated from who your son is, because your son is over there with who you really are. So the reunion is in the closing of the gap. And next we want to say that the details of life often confuse you, because not just you, all of you, because there is so much erroneous, unnecessary conversation about how did it happen, why did it happen, who brought it about, should we do something about it, was there foul play, should somebody else be punished. In other words, there's all that stuff that, while it is of interest to the subject, it's not of interest in closing the gap. And closing the gap's all that matters, you see. Very often, powerful teachers come together in co-creative experiences in order to come to great awarenesses. And you are so right in so many things you said. The world is grieving massively, and from our point of view, utterly unnecessarily. You know yourself from many moments of, some moments of, occasional moments of it lifting off of you and your heart singing for a minute. You know that your heart can sing again and consistently even with all of this having happened. You know that.
Yes.
And every time it does, you feel guilty. Your heart sings for a moment and then you think, given the circumstances, I've got no business having a happy heart. And that's the story that you want to quell. You want to help people understand what grief really is. And you want to help people understand who they really are. And you want to show them how they have the power to return to their joy while they don't have the power to control what's happening around them. That's what unconditional love is. Conditional love says, my child will be born. My child will be happy. My child will do everything that is good for him. My child will please me in every possible way. I will control these conditions. A very conditional love says the conditions are controlled and they are pleasing to me and therefore I feel good. Unconditional love says I cannot control the conditions, but I align with love anyway because that's my true nature. And there is only freedom in unconditional love. Conditional love is bondage, 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 bondage. And bondage and grief are identical vibrations. There are people in bondage over the fear of what will happen because they don't think they could live through it. And you're here to tell them you can. Not only can you live through it, not only can you survive it, you can joyously survive it. Because the way you feel isn't dependent upon anybody else, no matter how much you love them. The way you feel is dependent upon your projection of thought in the moment and its relative alignment to who you really are.
The struggle with this action oriented that I've heard before, I feel disconnected from trying to be where I am, closing the gap, and then where is the next step?
Well, that's because you're just getting the cart before the horse, so to speak. In other words, work on the alignment as best you can, and new and next logical steps will begin to appear to you. In other words, when you say, I don't know what to do, and there is confusion because you don't know what to do, it's because you haven't done the aligning thing first. And when you do the aligning thing first, what to do will occur to you, and it will feel right on, you see.
Okay. Okay. All right.
We think you're doing remarkably well. Things that seem so wrong and so challenging and so unnecessary and so unforgivable and so awful are the things that cause the greatest parlaying of desire. And when you line up with that kind of desire, oh, do the heavens sing, you see.
Okay. Thank you.
You don't need tragedy for your heart to sing, but your heart doesn't need to stop singing with tragedy.
Right. Right. Thank Good. You. Thank you.
Are there any words that could describe that?
I'm so happy to be here. I'm so grateful to you, to Esther, to Jerry. I experience a lot of sadness when I have a particular thought about a situation that I went through. Let me tell you what it is. I'm a flight attendant. I was based in Boston on 9/11. I was down in operations when the flight attendant called from the aircraft and gave the specific last-minute instructions of who was the terrorists were on the plane, and I witnessed the telling of that directly. I have no ill will towards them. I've never had any connection with politics, or I intuitively understood that what they thought they were doing for whatever reasons. That had nothing to do with me. But when I remember that day, I'm really, really sad. How do I clean that up?
Well, events like that that are big, it's something that, first of all, is not easy for you to let go because it stays active in the vibration of the mass population. In other words, it's something that comes up. It's something that is sort of pushed in your direction. And when you think about it, when does it most often come to your mind?
Well, because I'm working, people will always bring up 9/11, and the question is always, where were you? And it just brings me right back to there. And I get just huge waves of sadness. I'm really proud of myself. I'm not crying now.
Well, anyone who hears the story could understand why you would have huge waves of sadness. So let's see if we can get to the bottom of something. Because do you think that it's possible for you to separate how you feel about something from how a lot of other people feel about it?
Yeah.
Do you think you can separate how you feel about what happened, because you described it clearly in a rather interesting way? Do you think that you could separate how you feel about something and how other people think you should feel? For example, sometimes people will describe to us that someone they love has made their transition. And they are understanding about death. They understand there isn't any. They understand about how there's no separation between physical and non-physical. So they are not having the trauma of this death experience that most of the people at the funeral are having. Right. And they're actually feeling pretty frisky and excited about life. They're not devastated by this event because they've got it in perspective. They're seeing the event more through the eyes of Source. And yet they feel uncomfortable expressing their joyful perspective among others. So they take on a more solemn attitude about it. Mm-hmm. In other words, they're influenced by the strong opinions of people around them because they care about the feedback that they're getting from the people around them more than they care about their own connection. And this is something like that. You just can't go running around saying, I was right in the heart of the events that surrounded 9/11, but I'm at one with all of it, without a lot of things coming crashing down around you from all of the people on all sides of the issue that really would expect you to agree with them. There are people that so want to beat the drum of the horror of everything. Are you aware of how many Holocaust museums and celebrations there are that happen around the world every year about something that happened a long time ago, as there is this intense need, it seems, to keep stirring up something in order to find vibrational compliance or resonance with those around? It's as if people are looking for others to be on their same wavelength, and so they gravitate, as we said earlier, to the lowest common denominator, and then want. So it is likely that there are many more people that would agree with someone who was terrorized by that. In other words, most people in your situation would be writing their own best-selling book about their perspective now of what happened. And if you were to write the book about how well you feel, many people would think you were cuckoo, that you're not more torn up about something like that, because much of the world is not ready to see the world through the eyes of Source. So if we were standing in your physical shoes, we would just put that in that perspective. We would say to ourselves on a regular basis, I'm not torn up about this because I'm not upset about death. And I'm not torn up about this because I do not see this as something that makes me or anyone else more vulnerable. And I'm not torn up about this because there are all kinds of terrible things that are going on the planet all day, every day, that I'm not privy to, and that I do no value to anyone by giving my attention to it. And then we would say, and this is the thing that we really want you to hear, I think that I was there, and here I was sort of in the middle of something, maybe as a leveling energy, maybe as someone who could add a little stability to something, maybe as someone who's not so freaked out about things that everybody else has been taught to freak out about. Jerry and Esther were in Buffalo a few years ago, and they turned on the television and were astonished to see that the local high school was taking all of the students. It was the week that they were emphasizing drunk driving, and all week long in the stadium they had bloody and broken cars that the students were all paraded through and around and by all week long. And every so many minutes the bell would ring, which indicated some other student was theoretically killed in a drunk driving accident, and that student was then plucked from the classroom. He was put into isolation. He was marked as dead. His parents were informed. They put together a funeral. Some of the students went to the funeral. They all wrote their sympathy cards for it. And it went on for an entire week because they were trying to make the point with these kids that they should not drink and drive. And we said, don't worry, the kids aren't having any of it anyway. In other words, it was just an excuse not to do the regular things that they had to do in school, most of them. But there are some who will be lastingly scarred from the trauma that was deliberately taught to them in an effort to motivate them, because the world for the most part has forgotten that you are extensions of Source, and that you have become, and that the Source within you is calling you eternally toward what you have become. In other words, most people don't want you to allow yourself to gravitate toward that which you've become. They think that they need to decide where you should go, and they need to motivate you to where you need to go. And so this is an example. This is the best example that any of you will see in your life experience, where people that had different perspectives around an issue and responded in different ways, and yet almost 100% of the population who views it goes to a negative place, to a negative side of that equation. And then there's you, different from that. Then there's you, right in the middle of it, who doesn't feel less safe flying than you did before, who doesn't feel more vulnerable relative to death than you did before. There's you, stable you, who has the whole thing in the context of your broader perspective, you see. This time-space continuum has broadened for you because you are so often tapped into the Source energy part, and so you're just not flappable like so many people are. And so what's there for you to do about it? Why do you feel so sad? You feel sad because there's a part of you that believes that you have an obligation to feel the way most everyone expects you to feel. You are responding to the expectation of a huge vortex. And we have to say, the stability of your being that we can feel, you would not go there if it was just a normal funeral or just a normal situation. It takes the hugeness of this vortex of millions of people around the planet beating the drum of something for it to be sucking you. But that's all it is. Your sadness isn't about what happened. Your sadness is that so many people are using an event like that as their excuse to deprive themselves of their connection to source energy. Your sadness isn't because you're in trouble. Your sadness is because you're in that moment of that thought, not allowing the fullness of who you are, and you're exacerbating it by acknowledging that there are a whole lot of other people doing the same thing. So many who are uplifters like you sometimes wish that you could take negative events away so that less clear-minded people would not have to suffer. But you cannot do their suffering for them. You cannot do their penance for them. You cannot live your life for them. You cannot die for their sins. There aren't any. In other words, you cannot do for someone else. You can only do for yourself, you see. But you can tell in the moment what you're doing for yourself, and you're doing a little bit of suffering on behalf of others is what's going on here.
Okay.
Makes sense?
Yes, it does. Thank you so very much.
So next time someone says, "Where were you on 9/11? Say, "Was that the day before 9/12? Was that the day after 9/10? Oh, I have such a big life. It's hard for me to isolate that exact date. 9/11 of this year? 9/11 of last year? 9/11 of the year before? 9/11 this morning? 9/11 last night? Be playful about, "Oh, there's so many 9/11s. I have two every day." So how are you? Do you feel more in control of your experience? You're beginning to feel a little invincible. Aren't you eager to get out there and sort of mix it up? Don't you love knowing that you can be or do or have anything? Don't you like the idea of the cooperative universe? Don't you like the indicators that are letting you know where your vibration is? Does it matter where you're putting your boat in the stream when the stream's moving that way and all the stuff you want's down there? Does it matter? It doesn't, does it?
Hi. I read Asking It Is Given last fall and had a fantastic winter manifesting, and my dad got sick May 10th and died June 4th. And my mom's prognosis now is 2 to 6 weeks. And I found it very challenging this past summer and now to, you know, focus on happy thoughts and think about things that make me feel good when we're, me and my brothers and sister and I are inundated with the grief, the anger, the obligations to clean out the estates. They're divorced, so it's two different households. And I wanted to hear your input on that.
Well, your parents were smart enough to croak back into alignment. It was sort of a last-ditch effort for both of them, but worked just the same. And since you're not going to croak anytime soon, we suggest you find a way to clean it up here. And we're going to give this to you in a way that you can really hear it. We'll give it to you softly and easily. But we so want all of you to hear this relative to the subject of the people that you care about making their transition. So there are two big points that we want you to hear, and when you do, you'll feel better. First, when someone that you care about goes away, whether it's a lover leaving or someone moving far away where you don't see them, or somebody having their what you call death transition, and you think you're missing them, you're not missing them. What you're missing is the alignment that you had before you were focused in this way. In other words, grief is not sadness that your father or mother died or are dying. Grief is the missing of who you are. Grief is the feeling of you vibrating over here when you're really vibrating over here. Grief is the feeling of separation. And we know it's easy to say, "Yes, but I feel this grief because of that." But we say, put a different because of it. Instead of saying, I feel this grief because of something I can't do anything about, I can't make my dad come back, and I can't keep my mom from going. I feel this grief because I'm focused in a way that has me separated. You can do something about that, you see. So the grief you feel is always you not letting yourself be who you are. And we know you feel like that's plenty good reason, but we've got to say to you, there is no good reason ever to separate yourself from who you are. So that's the first thing we want to say to you. The next thing we want to say is that as you come to understand that you are source energy here in a physical body, and that that which is non-physical is always aware of you, and as you remember that those people that you care about who are now cavorting with the non-physical likes of us have easy access to you, but you don't have easy access to them. In other words, you must be a vibrational match to where they now are. And there is such a tendency to say, I will feel better if I can change the conditions, but since I can't change the conditions, I won't feel good. And what you've got to say instead is, I can't change the conditions, but I do insist on feeling good in spite of the conditions. Which means you have to care more about how you feel than how others around you feel. In other words, there are a lot of people that don't think you should be celebrating your parents' reemergence into pure positive energy. There are a lot of people who don't think that it's a wonderful thing that in one fell swoop they have let go of all resistance and they are now coming full into who all that they have lived has caused them to become. We think that is reason for celebration, not reason for grief, you see. So it's an interesting thing that someone can get themselves into a position where they release altogether and reemerge into non-physical, and then those that are watching could take it so utterly backwards. You've practiced the subject of death in such a negative way that you don't even know what it is. You don't realize that it's the beginning of pure alignment. You don't realize that it's coming into the fullness of who you are. You don't realize that it's getting all of your power back. If you knew how wonderful the death experience is, you wouldn't give it to those buggers you're so mad at. So long you've been equating death with something that is bad. That could kill you. That could kill you, they tell you. Oh, that could kill you. Oh, as if it's a terrible thing to die when there's no such thing as death, and it's not a terrible thing to reemerge into the fullness of who you are. You need a different label for death. You don't want to say, my father died. You want to say, my father released all of his resistance and came into the full alignment of who he is and now is aware of me, and I have access to him in a closer, fuller way than ever before.
Yeah, you hit it right on the nose, because my follow-up question was the idea, I'm not married and I don't have any children, and the idea of being alone, you know, without my parents was a scary thought to me. But I'm an adult. I shouldn't be afraid of that, you know.
After Esther's parents died, Esther started introducing them to people as, we're Jerry and Esther, we're both orphans. To try to make fun of that. In other words, that was a little levity that didn't go over very well. You're still sort of hung up on that death thing, aren't you? Here's the thing that we really want you to hear, and it's what we said before, but you couldn't hear it, but now you can. You're not afraid of being alone without your parents. Focusing the way you have has made you alone without your source. Mm. In other words, it's the diminishment of your connection with who you are that is this empty feeling, not the loss of your parents. You don't miss your parents. You miss the feeling of connection that often they provided. Ooh, that's big, isn't it? You don't miss your lover. You miss the feeling of connection that your lover sometimes helped you to make. You're not missing your parent that is dead or dying. You're missing the connection that you associate with security or with someone loving you. And we want to say to you, you'll never be separated from the, let's put it in a different way. The source within you will never stop focusing upon you and will never not be there for you. And will never cease to call you toward it. But sometimes you can fixate on things that don't let you go. But you'll get over it. because it's not natural for you to feel that way. And while all this hubbub over all of this is sort of insisting that you keep focusing there, so you're more out of whack than you've been in a long, 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 long time. Mm. You're more out of whack now than you've ever been in your life.
Yeah. Yes.
Because of all of this, you see.
Yes.
But you'll snap back faster because now you know how it all fits together. This won't be difficult to you. Just a little time and a little concentrated effort. You don't even have to apply anything that we've given you here today deliberately. You already know it so naturally. You could just sort of say things like, this too shall pass, and all is really well here, and I don't want either one of them to remain in physical. I don't want Dad to come back, and I don't want Mom to stay. I know that this is the path of least resistance for them. All is well. I know that they're on their way back into pure alignment, and I'm on my way back into pure alignment. The difference is they're going to croak to do it, and I'm going to focus to do it. We are out of time. Whining doesn't help. We've enjoyed this interaction, have you? Been a little slow going in the sense that we've not been tiptoeing through small issues, have we? Been talking about the big ones and or what you call the big ones. And we want to remind you that it's the day-to-day responses that you have to the things that are not so much the big ones that set up your vibrational readiness for life experience. In other words, you don't lose your connection with Source only when your father dies. You lose your connection to Source when you're mad at somebody at work, or when you negatively respond to someone in traffic. Life is not about these big, what feel like turning points. It's the moment-to-moment decision about turning downstream rather than upstream and doing it on purpose that makes up your life experience. The theme of this Art of Allowing workshop is really just lean downstream. It's not put a motor on your boat and hurry downstream. It's not create your own reality or something's gone wrong. It's you are pure positive energy beings who are supposed to feel good, and when you don't, you can't feel really good, but you can lean in the direction of what does feel good. The theme of this gathering has been recognize how I feel and somehow consciously make some point of reference of how I feel right now with a determined feeling to improve the feeling slightly. In other words, if you're not willing to acknowledge how this feels, then how can you know if you found a thought that feels better? And if you haven't found an awareness of where you are and reached deliberately for a better feeling thought, then you haven't quantified your journey. If you can't feel the difference between an upstream thought and a downstream thought from where you are, then you can't tell which way to go toward all the things that you want. It's the simple day-to-day experiences. We want Esther to pick up the telephone and complain, my breakfast isn't here, and then in the middle, even before she's spoken the words, we want her to remember that she has control of the way she feels, whether her breakfast is there or not. And we want her to come to a place of feeling good, even if breakfast doesn't show up. You've got to decide that you are no longer responsive to conditions, that you are the controller of the way you feel. And you just have to practice it thought by thought by thought by thought by thought. We've noticed just in the time that we've been together today that there's not one of you who does not have awareness of the emotion within you. And it is our promise to you that you will never again, experience any kind of emotion, positive or negative, without consciously acknowledging the correlation between what you're thinking and feeling, and very soon, what's manifesting in your experience. You have now come back into conscious empowerment of your own life experience. Does that mean that it's all going to be easily downstream for you? No. There's going to be a lot of opportunities for you when you find yourself upstream to turn downstream. We want you to feel all right about that. The last thing in the world that we wanted you to get the impression of is that we think you're doing something wrong when you're pointed upstream. We don't. Upstream is part of the contrasting experience that helps you to differentiate what it is that you want. Upstream is the contrast that you knew would be here. We don't want you to feel bad about finding yourself upstream. We want you to feel glad that you are aware, that you know the difference between upstream and downstream. That's all. You think you know the difference? Yes. Could you feel it with those who sat in the chair?
Yes.
Do you think that you will be able to feel the difference when you are complaining about something and when you complain a little less?
Yes.
Do you think that you can tell the difference between a true complaint and an attitude of appreciation? Do you think that you have the ability to move from an attitude of complaint immediately to an attitude of appreciation? Do you think that you can immediately turn like that? You can't. Can you go from something that you really feel complained about to something that you really feel joyful about all at once? You can't. Don't you want to give yourself a break and stop trying the impossible? But do you think that you can complain about something and then complain about it a little less? And a little less, do you think that you can eventually turn a complaint into a, well, maybe it isn't so bad? Do you think that you can turn a complaint into a, well, maybe it isn't so bad and maybe there is a silver lining? Do you think you can turn a, maybe there's a silver lining into, oh, I see definite benefit for me here? In other words, just be easy about this. Let the guidance that is within you do what it was always there to do, which is to help you feel the vibrational relationship between your mental stance and your mood right now and the mental stance and the mood of who you really are. If you're mad at somebody, you're out of whack with who you are. But it doesn't mean you're wrong. You might be really justified. It just means you're out of whack with who you really are. And you got to make a new decision. Is it more important to me to be right and justified in my madness toward you? Or do I want to be in alignment with who I really am? That's the choice that you're making all day, every day. And as you care more about how you feel and less about what other people think about how you feel, this will be such an easy turning for you all day, every day. We've been watching you and we've noticed that you are pivoting in this stream 1,000 or more times every day. And every time you pivot, you get closer to who you are. But you know what we've been watching? You're pivoting this way, then 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 this way, down and up and down and up and down and up and down and up, because you're letting the conditions control the direction of your thoughts. Now you know different. Now you're going to deliberately pivot down and down and down and down and down and down. And do you know, in less than 30 days of a concentrated effort at leaning in the direction of that which feels better to you, you will improve the vibrational frequency of your emitting vibration so substantially that every relationship you have will shift, your relationship with money will shift, your relationship with your body will shift, everything in your life will shift and show you dramatic evidence of the shifting in your vibration within 30 days. So it's worth leaning downstream. We've enjoyed this interaction immensely. There is great love here for you. And as always, we remain joyously and eternally incomplete.
Our primary intent with this work is to connect with those who are tracking this information. And Esther and I are most appreciative of the role of your intentions in this joyous, co-creative experience. For additional tapes, CDs, books, videos, catalogs, or to reserve your space at an Abraham Hicks Art of Allowing workshop,
Please call 755-2299, area code 830, or write to Abraham Hicks Publications at Post Office Box 690-070, San Antonio, Texas. And the zip code is 78269. Also, for an immediate overview of our works, visit our interactive website at www.abraham-hicks.com.